He's a creator, an innovator. His passion is why we listen. His knowledge is why we want to be educated.
He really has spent his life focusing on people that make excuses.
With a man who has turned around over 800 bars throughout the world, Bar Rescue's John Taffer.
If you do tomorrow what you did today, you will get tomorrow what you got today.
All righty, before we get going, because I got a pretty impressive podcast for us this week, I do need to recognize the hard work by our Congress in their national days. So Christmas week, we start off with National Roots Days. No, I don't know if that's our roots or the roots that grow in the ground, but of course, Hanukkah begins as well. We have National Eggnog Day this week. Well, that makes sense, right? National Pumpkin Pie Day, that makes sense. National Candy Cane Day. But on the same day is National Winers Day. How about National Fruitcake Day, Corey?
Oh.
You ever get a fruitcake from anyone?
No, but I'm good.
Well, exactly. I think that there's 5 fruitcakes in the entire world. And I think people keep re-gifting them.
Yeah.
Because nobody eats them, right? It's like a brick. I hate fruitcakes. So now I don't want people to send me a bunch of fruitcakes. I hate fruitcakes. And I am convinced whoever gets a fruitcake just re-gifts it because they never go bad. It's like a Twinkie. It'll be fresh till right. You know, till the cows come home. National Short Film Day this week and National Chocolate Candy is this week. But the day of the month that I'm going to pick is the most important of all. You ready?
I'm ready.
National Bicarbonate of Soda Day.
Okay.
Believe it or not, there is a file someplace in Washington, D.C. commemorating that day as a fact in our government. Well, there we go. So it's a really exciting time for us. I'm in Vegas, going to go down to Palm Springs for a couple of days, get the hell out of the cold. It's cold here, man. You know, it's funny. People think that when you're in Las Vegas in the desert, it doesn't get cold here. They think we're baking in the sun all year. It's freaking cold here, man. But what a great time of year it is when you think about what's going on this time of year. You know, we have the gift of giving, of course. Right? Giving each other's gifts, you know, saying Merry Christmas, a certain feeling of love and maybe less tension in the air than has been in the air with all the impeachment and political BS going on. And I was reading an article early today, Corey, that really was an amazing article. It was so cool, in fact, that I think we should post it. Let's post it.
Okay.
And the article was talking about how this is the best decade in the history of the world. And it listed all the amazing things that are happening around the world. Poverty is at a low level. Here in America, food stamps are at a low level. Poverty has been reduced hugely. Employment is down. But not only here in America, worldwide. And it even talked about something that I never thought of before, Corey, how technology is making the world and the things that we do smaller. For example, a car weighs less today than it did years ago. It uses less materials.
Okay.
Think about your phone. It replaces a camera, a computer, a recording device, a playback device, a device, an iTunes music playing device. Think of all the things that your phone replaced.
Yeah, that's true.
So now what it is weighs less than all those other things together, right?
Yeah.
So in essence, your phone is an economizer. At the end of the day, it creates a smaller footprint than all those other products did. And then when you take a look at carbon footprints and all those things of how we and a bunch of other countries in the world are really leading the way on moving us in the right direction, I suggest to you a contrary thought to what we're hearing today. And I don't want to get political in this podcast. I rarely do. But if you listen to what's going on out there in today's political world, Corey, you're going to hear about how we need fundamental change in America.
Oh, yeah.
But yet employment is the lowest it's ever been. You're going to hear how we need to change, you know, and take care of those who we've left behind. But yet income is up the most in the past couple of years than it's been in 10 years. So people are working. They're making more money. How is that so bad? And then people are arguing with each other, build this wall, don't build that wall, do this, we fight and all this stuff happens. But yet, last week a bill was signed that provided a raise for our military, that's a great thing, and actually provided the money for that wall. So all the bickering and all the talk and everything in the end was BS. At the end of the day, the wall was funded and nobody even really knew it. It was in another bill. So all that fighting of to do it or not to do it, all of it didn't matter. In the end, it got done anyway. So I want to put a thought to all of you. We got a really special podcast this week. Got Jordan Harbinger, Grant Cardone, and Julian Michaels with us with very special clips and moments that we've done this year. But I want to put together a powerful thought for you. When you listen to the news and hear how bad everything is and how we have to fundamentally change this and change that, we have the best economy in the world and the best decade we've ever had in human history. Do you want to change that? I wonder. I don't think I do. So with all the naysaying and all the political divisiveness and the arguing and do we do this, do we not do that, who are we leaving behind, who are we not, I'd like you to end the year with maybe a positive thought, Corey, that rather than thinking about what's wrong, how about if we think about what's right for a few minutes? How about if we start the new year with a little positive energy and think, wow, the economic environment is the best in your lifetime, Corey.
Yeah.
Opportunity to start new businesses is the best in your lifetime. The opportunity for the friends and people around you that have struggled with unemployment and food stamps, and this is their best opportunity in their lifetime. Let's embrace that. Let's just, for the next 2 weeks, we can start fighting again after the new year. What do you think, Corey?
I like that.
But why don't we, for the next couple of weeks, think about what's good about our lives, about our country. In this time of year, maybe your New Year's resolution could be, and I know mine's going to be, to embrace what's good much more than embrace what's bad. You know, and when I talk to people and life coaches and friends and people that I come to dealings with, there's one thing I learned at a really, really young age, Corey, and that is if I work on my weaknesses all day long, they're still probably going to be weak when I'm done. But if I work on my strengths all day long, oh, man, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm a baseball player and I'm a lousy thrower but an incredible hitter, which should I put my time into?
Probably hitting.
You bet, man. So in life, isn't that the case? I mean, Corey, you're really good at what you do, buddy. Why would you want to focus on what you're not good at?
Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
How's that going to get you ahead in life?
Right.
So how does that get us ahead as a society when all we think about is what's bad, what's bad, what's bad, what we did wrong, who this and that? Maybe we have less to fight about than we think we do. And that's what I wanted to say. I suggest to all of us, Democrats, Republicans, liberal conservatives, libertarians, communists, socialists, I plead to everyone, we have much more in common than we think we do. There's much more good around us than bad. And to wake up in this new year with a bummer attitude, pissed about all of these things that are wrong, I suggest is a mistake. And I suggest that there's a lot of positive, a lot of good going on around us, Corey. This could be your best year ever, 2020. Do you agree?
Oh, I know it's going to be mine.
Well, bingo. So if it can be yours, it can be mine, and it can be everyone's. That's the message that I wanted to send for this holiday, is please take a look at what's good. Corey, let's post this article in the next couple of days.
Okay.
And the name of the article is, you know, soaring success of this decade than we've ever had. I forget the name of the article, but we will post it, and we'll post it on all of our channels. Please take a couple minutes to read this. Man, we have a lot to feel good about as Americans.
John, I got to ask, do you believe in New Year's resolutions? Do you think people should stick with those?
You know, I think anytime we reflect on our lives, Corey, and where we're at and where we want to go is a good thing.
Okay.
Sometimes it happens in New Year's. You know, it's more purposeful. You sit down to do a New Year's resolution. But have there been moments in your life when you've been reflective when it wasn't New Year's? Maybe you meet a new girlfriend, you get a new apartment, maybe you get a new job. You know, maybe things like that happen. I can remember years ago when I owned one of my first nightclubs, which was just outside of Chicago. I had a nightclub called Rookies. Pretty big, about 28,000 square feet. Had a boxing ring in the center.
Wow.
Which was a dance floor and stuff. And I'll never forget when I opened that nightclub, and I owned a nightclub, Corey. I had never owned anything like that before. And it had an amazing video system and an amazing sound system and incredible dance floor lighting. And it cost like $800,000 to build. And I had raised the money, and I had opened it, and it was mine, man. I freaking owned it. Well, that night we opened, we were hugely successful. And at the end of that night, I had one of the most reflective moments in my life. And it wasn't New Year's Eve and it wasn't Christmas. It was just a night. I sat in that room by myself at 4 a.m. after it had closed. And a realization came upon me, a realization of the fact that I can be successful, that I can do this. In that moment, Corey, of standing in that building, I realized that I was invincible. I realized that there was nothing I couldn't accomplish if I worked hard enough for it. That was one of the greatest resolutions I ever had in my life, and it wasn't New Year's Eve. So my point is this. New Year's Eve gives us that chance to come up with a resolution. It gives you a chance, Corey, to sit down, look in the mirror, and say to yourself, how can I be better? And anytime I think you do that, buddy, I think we're better off for it, don't you?
Yeah, totally.
So what is your resolution? Oh. I busted him. Do you even have one yet? Have you thought about it?
I don't know. I mean, everything that I've been wanting to get done has kind of been happening and working for you and stuff. So I think it just putting all my marbles in the same basket and just keep pushing forward with what I'm doing.
So let's talk about that. So you got a job you like, right? And I know you're not saying that because I'm sitting here, because I know you love your job, because I see you every day here.
Yeah, of course.
So you got a job you like and a place you like being.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal for you, obviously. So when you think about the fact you got a job you like and a place you like to be, you're good at it. You obviously feel job security, right? You know you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So you got all those great things. You got a new girlfriend, correct?
Yeah, I do.
Who you love.
It's almost too good right now.
You moved into a new pad, right?
Yeah. Just got a puppy.
So you just got a puppy. So puppy, new pad, new girlfriend, job you like, person you like working for. You get creatively challenged, right? So all is good for you right now, isn't it?
Yeah.
So when you think about that moment and you think, man, my girlfriend, puppy, apartment, all is so good, what would be your resolution? How do you make even all that better? I mean, you're a young guy, Corey.
Right.
And you got a lot of great stuff in your life.
Yeah.
So what would you think about that you'd say to yourself that I want to make better?
I think just being better at what I'm already doing.
Good point. So the fact of the matter is, a resolution doesn't have to be any great revelation. I'm going to become a lawyer next year. I'm going to become a brain surgeon.
Yeah.
It does. All it has to be is I want to do what I'm doing a little better. And I guess that's what we've done. That's why we have such a great decade. So why don't we think like Corey does? I mean, why don't we just embrace what we have and let's be really proud of the success that we've had this year and together as a country and as people, because we are moving forward as a society, and that's a pretty freaking cool thing. Can it be better? Sure it can be better, but I'd much rather it be better from where we are today than it be better from where we were 10 years ago. That's for darn sure. Well, this is a very special podcast, and those of you who've been listening know that this month we wanted to do something really special. We didn't want to do best of, which is just picking clips. I wanted to do something that was meaningful. And as we approach the new year and resolutions and think to ourselves, you know, what can we do to start that business that we wanted to start? What can I do to get that promotion that I wanted to get, that friend that I wanted, that relationship that I needed, that puppy that you wanted, Corey, that new apartment? How do we do those things? And what lessons can we learn from those who have struggled? And I wanted to bring in a couple of my favorite interviews from the past year and a half. And we've done about 79 unbelievable interviews with everyone from the entertainment business to attorneys to business leaders, charity leaders, comedians, actors, almost every type of person we've had on the show, even trendists we've had on the show. Well, I wanted to pick three special people for this podcast. This is not a best of show. We're not doing little clips. We're going to provide sections of what I think was some of the most moving and inspirational interviews that we had this year working with you for this podcast. The first one is Jordan Harbinger. Jordan is an interesting guy, a computer whiz who became a hacker, Corey.
Yeah.
He was a hacker. Got busted by the FBI as a hacker.
Yeah.
Then turned those skills into positivity, started working for the FBI, became hugely successful, and is now a motivational speaker. So think about this. From a criminal almost, right, a hacker, to an example of an industry, to an example of motivation. Jordan is a really special guy, a young guy who's turned his mischievousness, right, his mischievousness,
mischievousness.
Thank you, who has turned his mischievousness, computer skills, into being a real contributor. And when you think about what he started as and what he turned into, this is an inspirational story. You got to listen to this. Check out Jordan for a couple minutes.
When I was a kid, I was, yes, later on I was a good student, and early on I was a good student, but I went through this phase where I got in trouble. I was I'm an only child, so that's an accident waiting to happen right there. So if you have kids, try to have more than one, because they'll either keep each other out of trouble or at least keep each other entertained, word to the wise. And what I started doing was, since I was an only child and I was really lonely, I didn't like going to school because I thought, I had kind of like the social anxiety issues that every kid has in sixth and seventh grade, by the way. And I started going on the internet, and nobody was on the internet except for probably like creepy IT guys and IT guys and creepy people, not creepy IT guys.
So these were the AOL Prodigy days.
Maybe even sooner than that, like 92, 93, probably they had AOL back then too. Yeah. And I started learning about things like hacking, and especially hacking phone systems. So I actually got a cell phone from a friend of mine, and I turned it into a scanner so you could listen to other people's conversations. And I spent hours every day listening to conversations. I hope the statute of limitations is run on the crime of essentially wiretapping, but I spent a lot of time learning about people that way.
That's fascinating. Were there particular things that you tried to listen to? Obviously, we're young kids, so it was two hot girls on the phone. I'm guessing that was in. That was on the top of the list.
That would have been great.
What types of things caught your interest?
Yeah, so what really, one conversation in particular kind of changed the way that I look at people, which was one of my neighbors was getting a divorce, and he lived with his mother, because I think his wife had probably booted him out of the house. So he was using his cell phone a lot to talk to his friends, his soon-to-be ex-wife, his sister, and even his mom. And so I guess when she wasn't around or something like that. So I would hear him talking with his friends, and he's like, yeah, she's so dumb, like my, you know, Nancy this, whatever. And then he'd talk to her, and he'd be really confrontational. And then he'd talk to his sister, and he'd be like, why doesn't she love me? And then you'd hear him with his mom, and he was just a baby boy. And I thought, if he took any element of his conversation with his sister and his mom and told it to his wife, he wouldn't be in this position in the first place. What do I know, though? I'm a 13-year-old kid. But that got me looking at adults as three-dimensional humans, because I don't know if you remember being a really little kid. I barely do, but adults, they feed you, they yell at you, they give you homework, and they drive you around. And then, like, your parents have a little bit more dimension, something going on that other people don't. But if you grow up in a healthy household, you kind of don't see a whole lot of – no one's like, oh, the rent's due. Oh, mom and I are fighting. Like, you don't see a whole lot of that.
We're insulated by that.
Yeah, we're insulated. So – I actually got to hear adult problems from an adult perspective at a very young age, which you don't want to live with that, because it turns you into an unhealthy person, like if your parents are fighting in front of you all the time. But if it's a neighbor, I had enough detachment where I was like, I don't know, I just see that guy cutting the lawn, but look at all these feelings this real human has.
And
who
the crises in his life.
Yeah, who knew?
Were there times when the crises were so big that you were almost shocked that he was able to mow his lawn?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, there were some calls where I felt legitimately bad for him, even though I thought he was kind of like a jerk in a lot of ways, because the way he was talking with his friends and his wife. Yeah. I realized, 20/20 hindsight, he was just posturing. He was very, very hurt by everything that was going on, even though it was of his own making.
Yeah.
And so I'd see him cutting the lawn and riding around in his like Corvette convertible, and I just thought, like, I kind of felt
big
bad
gold
for
chain
him.
On his neck too?
No. I lived in Detroit. I'm from Detroit, so he was just kind of like a regular. Looking now, I realize this was just a guy who was really insecure and trying way too hard and had no idea how to handle real problems. So, he was a grown man, child.
This is deep, though. So you as a 13, 14-year-old kid starting to see a depth of life that most 13 to 14-year-old kids won't see.
Yeah, and that got me interested in people.
And you're living in a protective house where that stuff is kept typically shielded from
100%. And I didn't even have brothers and sisters to fight with. So conflict among adults was like, whoa, what is going on?
So, okay, let's go up 2 years.
Yeah.
Now you're 16.
Yeah.
How did that change you? What did you want to do then? How do you think it redirected your life? This is fascinating.
Yeah, I started wiretapping and phone listening to a lot of phone conversations. I started opening up those green boxes on the side of the road and listening to – I just got obsessed with people and learning about people. And I read books like Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People, which when you're 15, 16 years old, nobody's telling you help other people and make friends. They're just no one's giving you any real advice other than do your homework, right?
That's right.
And which is good
follow
advice.
Follow the rules.
Yeah, follow the rules. But nobody was doing the self-help stuff, really. And I got really into it, And I started to become absorbed by it, but also I started to see how scammy the whole niche was, where it's like there's a whole lot of pump you up, take your money type of self-help stuff. Yeah. And I got really interested in the human element of this, and I eventually started to get in trouble because I was doing a lot of other sort of pranks and things. And one notable prank that got me in trouble was I ordered pizza for the entire school, but I used a credit card number that I had created on my own using a computer. And that
so you were very computer hacking technology savvy.
Yeah, I was to, for better
you know,
or worse.
Interesting. I have a similar story in a different way. I went to college for a few years, and when I went to college, I took cultural anthropology classes.
Oh yeah,
which were the study of primates.
Yeah, yeah, you know,
elephant societies and gorilla societies, and I learned how primates were just like them.
Yeah,
we're really very primal.
Yes,
in our core reflexes and the way we react to things.
Oh, yeah.
We get protective or we get aggressive or you know, we pound our chests.
Yeah.
Or, but so I always have been very keyed into to human behavior and have studied it myself. You know, you've watched my show. So
sure.
But it's interesting how we both got sparked for this desire and need to learn about human behavior.
You attack a lot of human behavior. I shouldn't say attack, but you attack behaviors on people that are dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And even in the book as well, it's like the process, and I'll talk to you about this when you're on my show, but the processes by which you go, hey, look, this is an excuse. Do you not see it? You're basically holding a mirror up for people, and if they don't see it, you hit them in the head with the mirror a few times until they do, which I think a lot of people need, especially if they're set in their ways and they're hell-bent on self-destruction, right?
Are you sick and tired of paying all these different companies for your TV service? Well, Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. You can watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all completely free. Pluto TV will never ask for a credit card, and you don't even need to sign up to watch for free. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again simply by downloading Pluto TV. And you can download it for free on all your favorite devices, including your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStation, and anywhere else you stream. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all your favorite devices right now. So when did you realize, holy shit, I got a business here?
What happened was I started to get in trouble for pranks like the pizza prank. And on that prank, they called the police because they're like, what do we do? This pizza got ordered and da-da-da, like who's going to pay for this? And the local police had to call in the FBI because they had no idea how to handle what they considered to be cybercrime at this point in the 90s.
So you were an innovator in cybercrime.
That's right, an innovator at age 14 or 15 or whatever it was. And the FBI guy came in and he was like, let me get this straight. You got information on somebody, then you made a card number, then you called this company knowing that there was a delay when they processed the card versus when they would deliver the pizzas. And I was like, yeah, I knew there was going to be a time gap between when they processed this and when they delivered the pizzas. And he's like, how do you know that? And I was like, I just read everything I could about credit card systems and phone systems and how they reconcile transactions. And the FBI guy, I got really lucky because he wasn't like, good, throw the book at this little crap head.
Yep.
He was like, wait a minute, you're too smart to be doing this crap. You need to focus because you should work for the FBI when you're an adult, not be in prison. And that kind of woke me up to
So he saw a good kid in a bad place.
Yeah, and he started actually asking me questions because he's like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? You clone cell phones. What are you talking about? You turned a cell phone into a scanner. So the Detroit office, Agent Forrester was the guy's name, the Detroit office of the FBI was like, this kid, we should bounce stuff off this kid because he's in this whole scene that we kind of know exists in Detroit with the phone hacking, but we don't have anybody in it doing anything.
There's a movie in this somewhere.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
So how old were you when you were in touch with the FBI?
I was 16, yeah, 15, wow. 16, when I started working with them.
How did your parents react to the FBI coming to talk to you?
They were actually first they were super nervous, but then when they talked with the agents for a while, they realized, okay, this isn't like a trap for our kid. Because one of the other things that I was doing was, speaking of AOL, I was having trouble with girls. No surprise, a big nerdy kid having trouble with women. So what my boss at the time told me to do, this is genius, right? He goes, look, how are you meeting girls now? I said, on AOL and chatting with them. And he goes, okay, here's what you do. Make another screen name on AOL, but make it as a girl and watch the messages from guys come in and then do something different than what those guys are doing. So I made a screen name that sounded like a female on AOL, and I just sat her in chat rooms, and then guys would start instant messaging her.
Yeah.
And what I found was I learned a lot about the opposite sex, but what I really found was I learned a lot – there are a lot of creeps online, which is no surprise now.
Big time.
So I started to – my boss one day goes, how's it going with the AOL and the dating stuff? And I said, oh, there's all these loser guys that are like 40, and they're sending messages to this 14, 15-year-old girl on AOL. And he's like, what do you mean? And I start telling him, and I printed off some transcripts, and he goes, wait. This isn't funny, man. These are perverts. These are like – these are pedophiles. Yeah. And it didn't occur to me at the time because I'm 16 and I'm like, 14-year-old girls, when you're 16, they're kind of they're in your class.
Right. They're approachable to
you. They're approachable to me. So I thought the 40-year-old guy was kind of a dork. And he goes, no, this is actual criminal behavior.
This is sick shit.
So he goes, get all these transcripts that you got from all these guys. And then we're faxing them to Agent Forrester. So we started sending the FBI these transcripts of these chats. And the FBI would take over the screen name and lure the guys to Ohio. Because, again, we're in Detroit. This is a few miles away. Lure them to Toledo, Ohio, and arrest them. This is well before To Catch a Predator was ever a thing. But we started catching pedophiles. And my parents were like, you're doing good work now.
Yeah.
Your weird scheming has turned into something that's keeping people safe online.
So were you working out of your house? Were you working out of their offices?
I was working out of my house.
And I'm guessing they provided you with the computer and everything? So you just did it off your own?
Initially, I just did it off my own because Detroit didn't have any office for cybercrime, as they called it. So what I would do is I would fax these to the Detroit office, and they would fax them to Washington, D.C., and then Washington, D.C. would call Detroit and say, have him talk to this guy for longer and have him state specific things. And then they would eventually take over my screen name, and they'd be like, don't log in, you know, for these 4 days, these 5 days, or like tell her you changed your name to this. And this female, I guess maybe female or male agent in Washington would take over.
So your scheme was a centerpiece of a sting.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Well, think about what Jordan flipped from as negative as it can get, from taking to giving, from being distasteful to being an example. That's pretty powerful stuff. I'll be right back.
Don't shut down this podcast. John Taffer will be right back.
Use BetDSI's live betting platform where you can watch all the events and even bet all the games till the final whistle. And new members get 100% bonus match using promo code TAFFER101. That's double your money to start winning today. So why would you choose BetDSI? First of all, it's been paying winners for 20 years. It's a top-rated site, and you can use your sports knowledge to make some extra cash this week. It is a really friendly interface. It's got a very cool mobile site, and most important, it's got the fastest payouts in the industry. So BetDSI offers options for everything. You can bet on NFL, NBA, NHL, boxing, and all other major sports, politics, reality TV, esports, virtually everything. So try betting at BetDSI, where you can bet on games from start to finish, every play, every minute until the end. And remember, new members get 100% bonus match using promo code TAFFER101. That's double your money to start winning today. Again, go to BetDSI.com and use promo code TAFFER101 to get this limited time 100% bonus offer to make some extra cash. Guys, it's only a game till you bet at BetDSI. So we've got a new technology that allows you to communicate directly with the show, and you can do that at anchor.fm/John-Taffer-no-excuses. I'm going to give it to you again because it's really cool to interact with the show using it. It's anchor.fm/John-Taffer-no-excuses. And if that's too complicated for you, which I know it is for some of you, then you can just send a note to podcast@johntaffer.com. That's podcast@johntaffer.com. Either way, guys, make sure you reach out to me because I'd love to hear from you. This is No Excuses. Well, my next interview piece is one of my favorite people, Grant Cardone. I met Grant, I guess, about 6-7 years ago, and Grant started as a sales consultant. His dad died when he was very young, just like my dad did. My dad died when I was 2. Grant is a similar story. His dad died when he was very young, came from a very, very hard background. His dad was a very hardworking guy. And when Grant grew up, he was taught a motto that work is a gift. Just show up every day. Well, Grant showed up every day, built himself, I'm guessing, a $500, $400 million asset in his real estate companies, his educational companies, his training platforms, his books, his videos. He's built an entire industry around just being Grant Cardone and teaching people how to be successful. But I got to tell you, I get to meet a lot of people, and I get to teach people how to be successful because I haven't done so bad myself. But Grant is someone who leaves a positive impact. Grant can show you that you don't need to have a huge level of education. You need to show up every day and work your ass off. And look what he accomplished by doing so. Give Grant a listen.
Yeah, well, my dad died when I was 10, right? So he was a provider, John. You would have loved my dad because he got up every morning, did whatever it took to take care of the family, a high integrity guy, really believed in, you know, never do anything to harm your name and take care of your family. He's five kids, had twins when he was 42 years old.
Did you get your work ethic from him?
Yeah, oh, no doubt, without a doubt. I got more than work ethic from him. I got this idea that work was really a gift, you know, and something that you wanted to be great at, whatever the job was, whether it was picking up sticks or being a salesperson or a plumber or whatever it was.
You want to win.
Yeah. And then he died when I was 10, so it left a big void in my family, personally for me, because he was the success guy. My mom was a housewife, and my mom had to sell the house the following week because she was worried about it, you know, being too expensive to upkeep. And then I went bad. I mean, just to fast forward, because I know you don't have a lot of time today because you're such a busy dude, man. I'm just so...
Who's saying that?
And so the next 15 years was really terrible for me. From 10 years old to 25, I got, you know, I got into a lot of trouble and went down, made bad choices and went through college and high school, hated it. And when I was 25, I really started redoing my life at 25. I became a very, very good salesperson at 25 years old, became a master at the game by the time I was 30, started investing in real estate when I was 33.
Grant is one of the best-known sales consultants in the country. Forget real estate and training and motivational. Just as a salesman, a technical salesman, your training programs, Cardone at University, the things that you do, I can't imagine anyone who's more impactful in the sales space than you are. And that's separate of everything else that you do in life. So that was your beginning. You really started being a great salesman, and then everything came from that?
Yeah, and we went, John, we went basically for the first 20 years of my career, from 25 to 45, we were focused on large companies, big, big, giant, like Fortune 500 companies, going in and working with their sales organization, whether it was Nissan or Ashley Furniture or Morgan Stanley, and saying, hey, how can we improve the customer engagement, be more productive, make it easier for the employees and for the customer. So these were big companies. But after 20 years, man, you know, taking a company that's making $5 billion and you increase their sales by $500 million, you're doing something really, really special and really important, and the money was awesome, but I wasn't changing individual people's lives.
Yeah.
And so the last 15 years, I guess, a little less than that, 12 years, we started putting emphasis on the entrepreneur and the individual, and that's how you and I met.
Your 10X program. Talk about that for a moment, because you really give back, buddy. I mean, Grant, the amount of time that you put into helping people on your social channels, through your educational programs, through your books, through your plan, this is a mission for you. I mean, you are so passionate about helping other people. It's really special. And by the way, Lane is the same way. You know, that passion lives in both of you.
She wanted to come in and say hi. We thought this was on video. She wanted to say hi to you, but just yell hi, Elena.
Hello. Thank you so much.
Oh, hi. Consider it a hug. So for my listeners, so Grant is, and I'm going to say it, buddy, is a multi-millionaire. He's a radio show host, a best-selling author in New York Times with the Cardone Zone, which is your great radio show. You have Cardone Enterprises, which does what, Grant?
Well, Cardone Enterprises is the consulting arm that works with the big companies. These are, you know, multi-million dollar contracts, long-term, you know, 3 to 5 years long with companies like a Nissan or a Chrysler or,
yep,
or you know, an Ashley. And these are worldwide contracts. But, you know, That's Cardone Enterprise. Then Cardone Capital, or the Cardone Real Estate Division, was created about, I guess, 18 years ago, and we've accumulated almost $1 billion. We'll probably hit $1 billion this year, John, in real estate. Wow.
That's awesome, buddy. You so deserve it.
Yeah.
So, when we look at, you know, I love your favorite saying because it's really so true. I want to say it just right. So if I don't say it right, correct me. The number one rule in creating success is to show up. Just show up, folks.
Yeah, even in sex, John, just the way you said it the first time. you got to show up, right? You got to show up. Like, great things happen to people that show up. And I mean, you can pray, you can meditate, you can do whatever you want to do. If you don't show up, God will not answer your prayers. The meditation won't work. You won't get lucky. Like, my career literally has been about showing up over and over and over again. Even Elena, that I'm married to, I just kept showing up in her life for a year, somehow figuring out a way to show up on her voicemail or email or wherever she was having dinner. And one day she's like, man, you're short, but you're kind of sexy.
She was right. So, you know, what's interesting is when that simple phrase show up, what happens when you show up? You learn something, you make a contact. You leave with an entrance into a different industry, a different segment. There's no way you lose if you show up. And people come, I showed up and a meeting went terrible. But you learned from the terrible meeting.
Yeah. And look, most of the times, I mean, just so everybody knows, like, most of the time when I show up, it's actually disappointing. There's nothing that does come out of it. So you got to really get used to showing up and not getting anything.
Yeah.
And if you can do that second part, right, just keep showing up. Keep showing up with a smiling face. Keep showing up with a good attitude. Keep showing up like you won. The marketplace will at some point reward you. You know, you talked about how much I give back. 80% of what I do, I'm never paid for. I never expect to be paid. I never expect to be compensated. But I know that those contributions, those investments will enhance how I'm paid on the other 20%.
Boy, you and I are so alike. So Grant and I both have consulting companies. We both sign large corporations, Fortune 500, international global brands. We both sign them to long-term contracts. And we go about our businesses in very different ways. I focus on operational elements, the four walls of a business, merchandising, marketing, all of the things that go inside it. And Grant makes people come alive. And when Grant does that, something happens, and you're going to smile when I say this, buddy. You know, years ago, I used to talk to people in conventions and meetings, who has expense problems? And every hand goes up. And if you have a business, you know, you're going to say your rent's too high, your marketing's too high, this is too high. But we don't have expense problems. We have revenue problems. Revenue cures everything.
That's right.
So when you look at a guy like Grant ignites revenue. He ignites energy. And when you feed a business with energy and revenue, everything else comes together. The staff gets happy. Energy levels go up. Cash flow improves. In my business, when I was young, Grant, I got promoted 11 times in 5 years, all because I could raise revenue. When you raise revenue, you get noticed, man.
The individual's value is tied to revenue, and this is what they don't teach you in college. I hear so many people say money's not important. And I'm like, look, you're either misinformed or very, very rich. Because, see, once you're Mark Cuban and you're a billionaire, you can say money doesn't matter anymore. By the way, you better say it.
Yep.
Because nobody can relate to you at that point. And those people that have given up on money are saying money's not important. But the reality is, look what LeBron did this weekend. I knew he was going to L.A. I've been telling everybody for 2 months. I said, I guarantee you, LeBron James will end up in Los Angeles. He's not following rings. He's following the money, and he should.
Yep.
It's his responsibility to follow the revenue train. And this is what Americans need to be told today. This is what built our great middle class years ago. And if we don't change that and go back to that, it will kill the middle class. People should follow the money. They should follow the opportunity. They should follow opportunity. And they should follow those things that can help produce more revenue for the company they're working for, because that's how they'll get promoted like you did.
It's the absolute truth. You know, I was talking to a caller last week who was talking about how he, you know, how does he step out of his comfort zone? You know, and terminology is so important, Grant, and I know you agree with this. One is not stepping out of a comfort zone. They're stepping into an opportunity.
Right.
And if you think you're stepping out of your comfort zone, why the hell would you do that? So, yeah. So you and I step out of our comfort zone all the time. That's what you mean by show up.
Yeah. And I agree with you. Like, I'm not stepping. I don't see it as stepping out of my comfort zone. I'm stepping into some opportunity. I love that.
And you grow from it. You know, the other word that kills me, and you'll agree with this, I hate the word dreams. These are my dreams. Dreams are fantasies. If we just took the word dream and turned it to goals and really bought into it, right? Because your dreams were goals. You made them happen. They were never dreams to you. They were goals, weren't they?
Yeah. There be people that say, hey, I'm living the dream. I hate that saying so much. I'm like, dude, look, I know where you live. I know what you drove up in, and I know what your problems are. That's not a dream. That's a nightmare.
You know, when dreams don't come true, we're not disappointed. When goals don't come true, we really are disappointed.
Yeah, and should be.
You know, it's funny. After 150 bar rescues, Grant, I found what I think was the common denominator of failure. And I know you'll agree with this, are excuses. You know, when people wake up in the morning, if they blame someone or something else for their shortcomings, they have no reason to change. But when you woke up in the morning before you were successful, who did you blame your failures on?
Well, I had everybody to blame. Economy, government, myself, my dad dying, my older brother.
But the magic word was yourself. You didn't pass the blame. You shared it.
Even when at some point I had to quit blaming me too, because I'm like, I got to do something. Now I got to get out of this situation I'm in. And that meant I had to get to the back of the truck and I had to push. I had a sales job in the auto industry that I hated. And rather than quitting that job, I said, you know what? I'm going to get great at this job and then I'm going to blow out of here. But rather than looking for another thing or looking for the thing that fit me or doing the thing I love to do, I had to figure out how to be successful at something I hated. And I know you'll relate to that. Like, I learned to get great at something I despise, and that changed my life.
What was that? What did you despise?
Well, I hated sales. And what I learned in sales that in that auto dealership funded me buying $1 billion worth of real estate.
Okay, so you just did your 10X boot camp, did you not?
Yeah, we did 10X, because you asked me earlier, what is 10X? 10X was a book I wrote. It's called The 10X Rule. It's the book of my 7 books that really took off internationally and got me fairly well known. And the 10X is basically, I think it took off and it created a literally like almost a cult following of 10X people. It's like a nation of maniac people that really get the concept of multiplying things rather than adding. And it's actually what Google uses. I don't know if you search Google, the company, and the 10X rule, they actually invest only in companies where they can get 10X multipliers.
Yeah.
So the 10X rule was written for me to figure out how to get my family to the next level. And I wanted to play at another level. After 25 years of being in business, I felt like I hadn't done enough. And I'm like, how can I go to some level that can't be disrupted, can't be destroyed, the economy can't take it from me? And that's what we've been doing over the last 6 or 7 years. And and in doing so, it's really opened me up to millions of people that we consider family, not fans of ours.
Well, that's how he did that. So when you think about Grant Cardone building the kind of value that he did from not having a dad and a hardworking environment, there is no freaking excuse why you couldn't do the same thing. So Grant is a great example of how you take nothing into something and how just hard work and just outright assertiveness. Grant is one aggressive son of a bitch. And if you don't follow him now, you should. You'll see what I mean. You follow him, he is aggressive as hell. And he learned what his assets are. And I've learned in life to take advantage of our unfair advantages. Grant's unfair advantage was his aggressiveness and his desire to work. And from those two things, the experience, the knowledge came, and the rest became history. Grant is a pretty impressive guy. If you haven't checked him out online, you should. Well, my next guest, Jillian Michaels, of course, is a fitness guru who became famous in the show The Biggest Loser. Well, Jillian never gives up mentally. She can't change what she does if she doesn't change the way she thinks. And Jillian has had this inherent ability to inspire people to actually change who and what they are. It's remarkable. And she's done it to herself, too. Jillian, I'm guessing, must weigh about 98 pounds.
Yeah, she's tiny.
She's a tiny, thin, beautiful young girl who is a dynamo that is unbelievable. She went into a life of television and fitness training and created a whole industry for herself out of nowhere and became a household name. Jillian is a very impressive young lady who has accomplished very impressive things from nothing. Listen to how she got there.
Well, to be honest, my mom had gotten me into martial arts when I was 12. And it wasn't because she was being proactive about my weight. I think that she felt like her and my father were going through kind of a crazy divorce, and she wanted me to have an outlet. So I get into karate at that age, and for the first time I was around individuals that were very supportive of me. You know, most were grown-ups or older teenagers. And of course there was no bullying in that environment. And it was the first time that I felt accepted in a social setting where I wasn't being picked on. So I was motivated by a group of supportive individuals, but over time, my martial arts instructor worked on me and educated me about food and fitness. And then the day came where I showed up with a bag of Cheetos, and I want to say I was like 13. And I mean, he lost it on me and basically was like, I can't care more than you do. If you're not going to pick up what I've been laying down, I don't want to waste my energy and I don't want to waste my time. Go home, call your mom, tell her to come get you, go home.
Wow.
And So I called her on her little car phone because it was like, I don't know, 1989 or whatever. I'm not. And she came back, got me. And to make a very long story short, as I thought about what he said and the loss of, you know, his mentorship and that environment was so great that it got me into martial arts. And that's kind of what really turned me around.
Were you disciplined before that?
Oh, God, no, not at all.
So not in any aspect of your life. So really, martial arts pulled a desire for you to be more disciplined. Is that fair?
It gave me a sense of confidence and strength. So hence the reason that I utilize fitness as a tool to empower people, because when you're strong physically, it transcends into other facets of your life. And when you're kind of in an environment where you don't have a choice but to be disciplined, and then all of a sudden you see you can be disciplined, it opens up an infinity of possibilities regarding what you think you're capable of.
Did you know that you would be in the physical training industry at that point in your life? Did you know it would always be a part of you?
No, absolutely not. I fell into it completely. I was training for my black belt when I was 17.
Wow.
And people would come up to me at the gym and ask me how much I charged. For a little while, I was like, for what? and you know, I was like delivering pizza for $5 an hour.
And you were a bartender, I believe, right?
I was. I had gotten a little fake ID when I was like 19. And was bartending at night and training during the day. And my mom got me my first little training certification. So I started that at around like maybe when I just turned 18 years old. And I just fell into it.
Wow. Obviously, you fell into it. You started to love it. And, you know, I find it fascinating how you've built such a powerful media career around being so who you are. And as one who's had reality TV, and you know that for about 8 or 9 years, I've had my shows. The only way to be successful in the television business is to really be authentic.
Yes, completely.
And you and I have had the same production companies, and we've had similar issues over our careers. And often television production encourages people like you and I, Jillian, to not be who we are.
Yeah.
And when we resist those moments and become unauthentic to ourselves, that's the worst television we could ever do.
Oh my God, it's disastrous. Not even just, I think it's a great metaphor for life.
It is.
Like some of the worst experiences I've ever had were when I didn't trust my God and I wasn't doing what I truly thought was right.
So with me, and I think you'd agree, the reason why the two of us have lasted so long on television is that we do stay authentic to ourselves. And that authenticity frustrates others sometimes, but I believe it tends to keep viewers, and it also keeps us honest, which you are very honest. So,
I agree.
So okay, so you now you get you ease into the personal training business, and you open your first facility in Beverly Hills. What was it? Yeah. Sky Sport and Spa in Beverly Hills. So how did you, I'm a business guy. How did you get the money and the capital and the plan? And talk to me about opening your first business, because that's exciting.
Oh my gosh, man. I was so scared. So it actually, between 17 and 29, which is when I finally got that place open, I had a moment in my mid-20s at about 24 where I got very caught up in the shoulds of life. You should have a real job. You should. So I end up segueing into the entertainment industry, first as a PA, then in the mailroom, then an assistant. And then I ended up becoming a little junior agent at a place called ICM, International Creative Management. And to make a very long story short, I've never been less happy and I've never made less money. And I end up with my personality being what it is, getting blackballed, like, she's never going to work again. So I'm 27 and I'm like broke, lost. I get back into training. But the time at ICM allowed me to build a very high-end clientele. So I get back into training and these people knew me as being very fit and they started working out with me. And I start working at a sports medicine facility and I realized that I built that individual's entire clientele and I could do it myself. And I like maxed out all my credit cards. I had clients that acted as angel investors. I had a lot of people basically take a real leap of faith on me and bet on me. And even our landlord, taking the chance on a commercial lease because I had a business partner, was kind of a miracle. And by hook or crook, we started the business with like $100,000, and it ended up working. And then a year later, I ended up on Biggest Loser and sold my half of that business.
Wow. So it's a wonderful story for everybody. So you were down at that point. You had gotten your butt kicked and you licked your wounds. You stood up and you took a more aggressive route than you had even prior to being knocked down.
Oh man. Yeah, pretty much. But I always say that like a bad day for your ego is a good day for your soul, right? Like
I agree.
It forces you, to kind of at rock bottom, J.K. Rowling, right? Best place to build a foundation for the rest of your life. Like it forces you to kind of put up or shut up. You don't have a choice.
Yeah, it does. It corners you into reality for sure.
Yes, that's exactly right. Thank you for saying that's exactly how I should have said it. That's it.
So you became really accomplished, and I want everybody to know this. So you got training certificates from the National Exercise and Sports Trainers Association, the Aerobics and Fitness Association of America, a kettlebell concept certified, AFAA. You hold nutrition and wellness consultant certificate with American Fitness Professionals and Associates. I mean, for people who think that you're just who you are because of television and cameras. Yeah.
I know.
They should know that you are a serious person and the real deal, and that you know exactly what you're doing, whether there's a camera present or not. And
yeah. You and I come from a time where people actually did the jobs that they got hired to see people. Like now it's, it's an Instagram world and it's a little bit different, and a lot of people in those mediums are not professionals. But yeah, I mean, I was a trainer, like one-on-one with clients since I was 17. I owned a sports medicine facility. I'm a black belt. I hold all the certifications. I do continuing education for trainers. And it's just, it is what I do. It's what I do.
So what I loved about your kit and reading and learning about you was, A, the way you came back to Biggest Loser is such a force. And it's interesting how you left the show.
Yeah.
And the show was impacted by your departure. And then you came back. There had to be some real gratification, or what I call audience flattery, in the fact that your departure from the show had an impact upon the show, that the audience, in fact, loved you.
I think that I believe with Biggest Loser that it was a dynamic. And it was just the right blend of like yin and yang with Bob and I. And I think Allison Sweeney just kind of being like the anchor to take you through the beats of the show. And then all the contestant stories were also fabulous.
Yep.
But, you know, when you take out a main ingredient of a recipe, it's not going to taste the same.
And it didn't.
And, you know the how Hollywood is. It's like forever yep. about trying to teach you a lesson.
Yeah.
And not let you be bigger than the show or build your own brand. And, you know, it just was a constant conflict and a nightmare, which is such a shame because, you know, I believe truly that if the producers and the network would listen, that show would still be on today, just like Big Brother and Survivor. But, you know, egos get involved.
They do. And of course, any show like that allows people to feel so good and based upon accomplishment that they themselves can relate to, I think it is a show that can run forever because the feelings that you get in that show, again, are so transferable to our own personal lives that it just registers. And even my Bar Rescue show, you know, at the end of the day, Bar Rescue is about people. It's just a bar environment. Yeah. You know, you're dealing with a weight environment. I'm dealing with a bar environment. But at the end of the day, we're changing human behavior. And if we don't do that, we fail. And, you know, you're a master of it. And you do it in ways that you and I do it similarly. Sometimes we shame them to be real.
Yeah.
Sometimes we appeal to their pride, right? Don't you want to look great for your husband or your kids? Or you don't, right? And we appeal to their pride. Sometimes we work fear. You know, you're gonna die if you don't fix this.
100%.
You know, you're gonna lose your life. And we use all of these things, which sometimes the viewer thinks is mean in the moment. But boy, Jillian, I understand you because you and I do this for a living. What you're doing is you're trying, and I'm guessing you're just like me, you're trying to find which of those triggers is going to make this person change.
Make them move. You got it. And, and we also have, I think what people don't understand, and I've said for years, is you know, you and I are working in a dire situation. You know, you're dealing with bankruptcy for the most part, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm dealing with physical wellness and life or death. So we're talking about a very serious situation on a ticking clock.
That's right.
And you can't get this person to move and hit certain benchmarks at an accelerated pace. There is no hope for them.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, it was never about like, oh, I want you to like me. Or I want America to like me. I was very focused on getting this person to hit those benchmarks before that clock ran out. And so I know you of all people actually understand.
You know, I love what I do. I love my hospitality work, but my favorite thing ever before I became on television was giving speeches. And I've always given about 30 speeches a year around the world. That was the business I was in before I went on television. And touching people and giving speeches was always the most inspiring thing I could ever do, Corey. There was nothing better than thinking that I could have, me, little me, could have an influence on somebody else's life. Then TV came along about 10 years ago. And now, rather than doing a seminar to a couple hundred or a couple thousand people, now millions of people are watching me. And I'm a freaking celebrity. And wow, but my greatest pleasure is getting the hug at the end of every Bar Rescue episode. You see, I believe that the greatest pleasure any of us can get from our days on this planet is those moments when we truly help others. Those moments when we actually can see that we can make a difference for somebody else. You see it when you ask somebody directions on the street, Corey. They're always happy to answer you, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because we inherently do want to help each other. We see it when people get in accidents on the street and strangers pull them out of burning cars. Because inherently, we do want to help each other. And certainly, I see it in my work with Bar Rescue. When my experts come in, the people come in around me to build and work all night long for free just to help these people. And I saw it in Puerto Rico. When we went down to Puerto Rico for Operation Puerto Rico, and I saw my crew and all these people come down with us for free, Corey, to help rebuild that town. And I remember when Spirit Airlines stepped up and Home Depot stepped up and all these other people stepped up just to help.
Wow.
And I think about the fact that all of us get some of our greatest moments when we help others. Some of us light up when others ask us to help them. This is a moment where I can come through for somebody else. I have something that you need, Corey. Directions, information, love, something. Those are our greatest moments, is when we help other people. So few of us recognize that. You see, if we really understood how good we feel when we help other people, even strangers, we would help other people more. And sometimes we rip ourselves off. Sometimes we don't seize that opportunity to help someone else. In the end, Corey, we didn't give ourselves the opportunity to that moment of pleasure, enjoyment, and self-gratification because we did help someone else. You know, this year is ending. For some, it was a great year. For a few, it was a tough year. But the most important thing is next year. And the most important thing is next year, if we can help each other just a little more, respond to each other's needs just a little more, listen to each other just a little more, next year can blow away this year. It's a new decade. It's a new year. It's a new beginning for us all. Let's do it together, not alone. So I want to wish you all an incredible Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, the enjoyment and love of family, peace, the people around you who mean the most. I want to wish you a new year filled with helping others, others helping you, less divisiveness, more love, more peace, more understanding. Let's do that together. Let's make this new year about us, not just me and not just you. Happy New Year, everybody. Talk to you next week. And don't forget, subscribe right now. Do it right now. Any place where you subscribe to your podcasts.